Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, I know.
In an uncertain world, there is always music which can be listened to in good company. Welcome to Friday 15, the show where we speak to friends and interesting people to the backdrop of great tunes and allocate 15 minutes to both. Today we speak to comic Dame Baptiste about the black British invasion of Hollywood and what one prominent African American thinks about it.
Baby, I'm hot just like an oven. I need some loving.
Baby, let's get down tonight. One of my favorite ever mashups, Marvin Gaye meets Bob Marley. Healing in Veins is probably one of the best ever created. It comes from the Bangers Are Mashed crew. It blends a soul and reggae masterpiece into a perfect whole. R.I.P. DJ Derek.
Ooh, baby, I'm hot just like an oven. I need some loving. And baby, I can't hold it much longer.
Dane, you know you were in LA back in December, right? Did you feel any twinge of guilt about the fact that you were over there potentially taking a role from an African-American? You'd been a black Brit and all. Because according to Samuel L. Jackson, there's too much of it going on.
No, I didn't really feel guilty at all. I guess culturally or racially, because we're all part of the African diaspora, I don't really see why we have to adhere to those kind of borders. Like, you know, American artists in terms of music are always seeking to penetrate the European market with their music. And, you know, there was a big time when a lot of R&B singers had changed their sound to EDM, you know, to mimic a little more European sound. You know, Drake being one of the more prolific rappers in the game right now, he makes a concerted effort to endear himself to a British audience.
But I suppose part of Samuel Jackson's kind of lament about this, and you touched on it a little, is that if you're specifically looking at roles about the African-American experience, to have black British folks to play them, our history around race and oppression and marginalisation is different from theirs. It's similar, but it is different, isn't it? And according to him, we don't know that experience.
Well, yeah, I mean, I completely disagree. I mean, there is argument that there's some elements of our journey so far as race relations has been somewhat different, but then at the same time, there's a massive amount of parallels. I don't really see the enormous differences between some of the practices of misrepresentation or, you know, police targeting, being marginalized along other economic or political lines, that's any different to an African-American. I mean, arguably, again, as well, you know, you had an African-American playing a Nigerian-American, Will Smith, in a Concussion. And then you had Morgan Freeman, I think, playing like Nelson Mandela in a film as well. And so, you know, given there's enormous difference between the racism experience of continental Africans as opposed to African-Americans as well. And it's actually a common narrative amongst other parts of the diaspora outside of the US that Americans, even though they designate themselves as African-Americans, typically tend to struggle to understand or be aware of African culture. Whereas I think that Black Britons are a lot more enlightened about the nuances and differences between, for example, maybe West Africans in the form of Nigerians and Ghanaians or Sierra Leoneans, where I think a lot of African-Americans will struggle to make the distinction.
I think it'd be hard to disagree with that as a point. However, if you look at the list of stars that have crossed over the Atlantic recently, obviously Idris Elba started that. Then you've got John Boyega in Star Wars The Force Awakens. Then you've got Naomi Harris in Moonlight, Chiwetel Ejiofor, 12 Years a Slave, David Oyelowo in Selma, Sophie Okonedo in Raising the Sun. You know, the list is pretty extensive. And then, of course, you've got David Harewood, who was in 24 and now is going to be the Martian Manhunter. You know, you could understand that if you were an African-American actor, you know, you feel like almost like a persecuted kind of species, really.
I mean, that is arguable, but then I think if someone like Samuel Jackson felt that strongly about it, then, you know, he's been in a few roles that he could very easily leave vacant for some of the other struggling African-American actors. Did Samuel L. Jackson need to do 50 First State, where he's playing the descendant of a Scotsman? I'm sure it shows a few, you know, Scottish actors.
Why do you think Hollywood... Because there's a wider question here, obviously, is that Hollywood, for the last, let's say, 15 years, has been in love with British actors full stop, hasn't it? Why has that happened, do you reckon?
Well, according to Samuel Jackson, he said the reasons are is that Black Britons are viewed as being classically trained, as well as being a lot more economical to employ than African-American
actors. We're cheap.
Yeah, we're cheap. We come cheap and we've got the training. You know, someone that's grown up in a capitalist free economy should understand how that works. That's how industries work.
Dane, when you were flown over, I mean, you must have flown over Virgin Atlantic to have your meet and greets in December. Did you feel cheap? Did you feel...
I feel cheap because I need to make it very clear that I flew over via Norwegian Airlines, not Virgin Atlantic.
Tell you what, it's bloody amazing, Norwegian. I can fly, return London to Oakland, which is basically San Francisco, £350 return. That's amazing.
See,
I'm surprised amazing. There aren't more.
So
why would
you take that? That's how business works. If you can get, you know, higher amount of output for your input, then that's what you do. So I guess industrially speaking, it makes sense for us, or what Samuel Jackson needs to do is maybe lower his prices then. And he wasn't complaining about this stuff and he was making the Spirit or the Man or the other guys. He was in the other guys as a cameo for like maybe 20 minutes. I could have gone to anybody. So I didn't necessarily feel cheap. I just feel that, you know, if money in a globalized market, if money is able to cross borders, then labor should be able to do the same. And if you can go somewhere where you can exploit an opportunity in order to realize either your creative or professional potential or your economic potential, then, you know, somebody that's grown up in America should understand it more than anybody else.
Well, we're arguing for a world of protectionist borders, lack of freedom of movement of labor, and a Trumpian protectionist world there, aren't we? As a Brit, as somebody who grew up in the mean streets of South London, was it Bromley or somewhere where you grew up?
I grew up in Lewisham, by the way. Yeah.
All right. David Boyega territory. How did you find LA? How does that whole system work when you have to go out there and just meet people in meetings?
It's something I'm very used to. I would say maybe the platitudes of the industry in LA are probably different to the British in that, the whole meet and greet and networking thing is not something that's that alien to me. But I guess it's how enthused people are to meet you and they've never met you before and could potentially not see that much of your work to form an idea of your talent, how enthusiastic they are. So more succinctly put, they can blow smoke up your ass in LA. But the important thing is not to get caught up in all of that and then end up, you know, becoming very disillusioned in La La Land.
Talking about LA, or at least Long Beach, California, piece of music that you've nominated this week is Vince Staples' Backpack, and he's from that neck of the woods. Tell me about the Cutthroat Boys.
I haven't heard a lot about the Cutthroat Boys. I know he's the crew that he's a part of, but I kind of came across Vince Staples online, like most people do when you're proactive looking for good music.
Uh-huh.
And I just found his rapping style to be amazing. I think it's that kind of nice. Yeah, when I think that there's a lot of time with rap, obviously it's stratified in a number of different subgenres, and I kind of like all of them. And you know, it's somebody who is just talking about their experience, and that's kind of balanced with artistry and lyricism. And his aesthetic, not just, you know, his lyrical and rapping ability, but the whole aesthetic so far as how Vince Staples, the concept for his videos, I just find it very inspiring and very refreshing.
Right, so back in the day, there was East Coast and West Coast rap. And I just don't know an awful lot about this. Does that divide still really stand with somebody like Vince Staples? Is he sound different from, I don't know, some guy from the East Coast, from New York, let's say?
Not massively. I think hip-hop, you know, following the East Coast, West Coast beams, like hip-hop and the deaths of Biggie and Tupac respectively, like it shone a whole new light on hip-hop and obviously gave it a much larger profile in the States. And as a result of which, the kind of post-Biggie Tupac era, you've seen that there is people are no longer confined to a particular style based on the region they come from. Because you could say, for example, arguably someone like A$AP Rocky, who's from Harlem originally, mm-hmm. has a very southern sound, as does Drake, who's a North American and more specifically a Canadian. Then you have, you know, somebody like Wiz Khalifa, who is from Philadelphia, called Pennsylvania, and you know, he sounds more like a West Coast act. Vince Staples, I would say, he's somebody who kind of his style, it has a lot of West Coast sensibilities in terms of the subject matter, but at the same time, much faster paced than people you see from, like, you know, a lot of California rappers. Very reminiscent of, like, Corrupt from the Dog Pound.
Uh-huh.
Very lyrical. But, and, you know, following the vein of, like, you know, the whole black hippie movement with, like, Kendrick Lamar, I think you're finding there's been a resurgence of West Coast rap, which is very much focused on lyrical ability and having a lot of depth to lyrics. So, I mean, yeah, the whole thing's changed. Like, you know, everyone can sound like they're from anywhere now.
For my future, baby mama, hope your skin is black as midnight. I'll take you out there, Honda. I can put you in the bins. I can balance out your chakras. Fornication is a sin. We can fuck all night, regardless of our father. All in heaven as I pray for new McLarens. Pray the police don't come blow me down because of my complexion. Everybody think they know me now because I'm chicken checking. Negro, you and I, my homie. How dare you think it's different, boy? You tripping. Gas break and dip the cash game. I flip the stack. Yeah, yeah, stack. So sick, religious, don't ask to chat and don't ask for pictures. Back, back, I'm trippin'. Till they take my bro and them out them CDC yards. Prison system broken, racial war commotion. Until the president get dashy, Vincent won't be voting. We need to meet position equals in that Oval Office. Obama ain't enough for me, we only getting started. The next Bill Gates can be on Section 8 up in the projects. So till they love my dog skin, bitch, I'm going all in. Gas break, and dip the cash came. I flip the stack, yeah, yeah, stack, get past the ceiling. So sad, religious, don't ask the chat and don't.
They found it. Depth close to 3,230 feet. A deep dive.
Clap your hands, you could probably serve a profile. You ain't gotta worry, don't be scary, cause we own now. Ain't no gentrifying us, we finna buy the hotel. Tell the world, but sit the sucker deep, cause we own now. We own now. We own now. Tell the world, but sit the sucker deep, cause we own now. Tell the government to suck a dick, cause we own now. Tell the president to suck a dick, cause we own now. We own now. Tell the 1% to suck a dick because we own ya. Tell the president to suck a dick because we own ya. Tell the government to suck a dick because we own ya. 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 We own ya.
Well, I'm the last person to really talk about rap because I kind of signed off with rap kind of just about the start of Public Enemy, I says, you know what, Public Enemy, I got that. But NWA, by the time that came around, I kind of signed out. But I was listening to some of my younger cousins the other day, and one of them was bemoaning the fact that you can't understand what people are saying anymore, that there's this kind of lazy drawl style. And he just said the mumble rap.
Yeah.
Is that the latest beef between people that are into rap?
I think the divide between rap now is seems to be more of there is now a whole new crop of rappers who have kind of found their fame online, and then have a style which doesn't seem to place that much emphasis on lyrical ability or lyrical depth. Has been described by a few people as being called mumble rap or remedial rap, or just terrible in a lot of cases.
So,
so that tends to be the argument. So it's more of a basis of being like, yeah, more about the style as opposed to like any kind of regional differences.
And I suppose the easy joke is there that some people just call that crap.
Yeah, and some people, yeah, and they do. There are a lot of people who have been very vocal who listen to some of the older rappers like Grandmaster Caz have categorically said that they have no interest in this emerging style of rap. So I think what has to be understood is that with some of the newer rappers now is that they have been brought up in a time where they have pretty much little to no awareness of rappers like Biggie or Tupac because they were probably born after they died. It's very difficult, you know, to be aware of something if you weren't around for it. And so I think Remit really is to try and educate the younger generation about the legacy of hip-hop and why it's provided these new opportunities for some of this for this next generation of rappers themselves. But then at the same time as well, it's just being aware that you know rap is has allowed, you know, some of these younger African-American men to provide opportunities, which Samuel Jackson continued to lament about, you know, giving the opportunity to reach their direct audience without having to go through the intermediaries of like record labels or industry. So I guess in a way, that's something that we should celebrate. And I guess with any market is that you're going to reach a point of saturation and cream always rises to the top. So if these rappers are good, they will last. If they're not that good, they won't last. It's just the way things work. And if their music is of a low quality and it is lowest common denominator music, then odds are they'll have a very fickle audience who will move on when the next trend appears.
Mm. Very eloquently put. You obviously know what you're talking about with this rap stuff. I'm going to give Mr. Vince Staples a bit of a proper listen and tune in with you next week and let you know how I get on. Moving back on to the matter in hand, you being a black Londoner, what differences did you notice racially, culturally, and maybe culture is more important than race here, or at least as important, being in LA in that kind of movie media goldfish bowl? I'm always struck by the fact that I spend half my year now in San Francisco, that whenever I open my mouth, I do get a slight double take, and at a bar, somebody will launch into a conversation about how can I have the accent that I have with the skin colour
that I
have.
You do.
Exactly.
Yeah. I've had that myself in when I've gigged in Scandinavian countries or in continental Europe. And it's because, you know, the idea of a black man, usually the quintessential black man is, most people see that as being African-American, because that's the image that is purported to the world. And as a result of which, the
African-American
male.
Or African-American. But I'm surprised.
Well,
I mean, but I'm surprised.
I'd say more African American than an African. But and it's the reason why, you know, as Paul Mooney says, the African American male is one of the most is the most imitated male on the planet, which I completely agree with.
When we were chatting, going backwards and forwards about what exactly we were going to discuss, and we looked at the list of the most prominent black British actors that have made their way over to Hollywood and had a reasonable amount of success. And we kind of noticed something, didn't we? And we go to that list again. So the John Boyega, Star Wars Force Awakens, Naomi Harris, Moonlight, Shia Tufel, 12 Years a Slave, and Doctor Strange now. David Oyelowo, Selma, and United Kingdom is just done. Idris Elba, The Wire, Thor, the list just goes on and on and on with him. Sophie Okonedo, who did Raising the Sun. There's a lot of people there with African surnames. Why do you think African black Brits are having so much success over in Hollywood?
I think personally, statistically, it's the fact that, you know, the majority of the names you call that are people of Nigerian heritage. And it's because, you know, I mean, in the UK now, especially in London, Nigerians form the largest amount of African or, you know, black immigrants in the country. So statistically, I guess there'll be more of them to go for jobs. And Nigeria is one of the most populous, if not the most populous country in Africa. So I guess there's more of the guys to go over there. And then I guess maybe arguably to an extent, it's there are Caribbeans making their way slowly out there as well. Because I said, you know, Naomi Harris, you mentioned. as well as, you know, Moni Love was over there for years, and she's still over there. And I guess it's because, you know, potentially, if you do have an African surname, then when people are thumbing through, you know, your headshots or your casting sheets, they might kind of be off-putting. I imagine that, you know, it's the same thing with any kind of job with your name. The more foreign your name sounds, the more adverse some employers can be to, you know, selecting you for the interview process. And maybe that was the experience that a lot of African or African-British actors experienced, hence them going to the States. I would wage, though, that it's not a real common narrative from British actors of African descent thinking to themselves that, you know, all the Caribbeans are getting the jobs in the UK, so I'm going to give America a try. I wouldn't suggest it's as drastic as that.
So, 2018, is the name Dame Baptiste going to be put on the list of black British actors that have made it in the US?
I would hope so, but at the very least, maybe be on their radar as well as fellow creatives, and just be aware of some of the other contemporaries trying to penetrate the market. So, you know, I remember Daniel, for example, was in Get Out. Daniel Kaluuya was at a gig I was at recently. A couple of years ago. So it's very inspiring to see somebody go from a similar position to you to now being projected into a very successful vehicle in Hollywood. And, you know, hopefully it leads to a lot more infinite success on his part as well. So I would say, yeah, best case scenario, is that I can join that list as well. But, you know, even worst case scenario, if they are the new kind of African or English or British A-list, then I can be D-listed by 2018. But yeah, I'd love to be on the crest of the wave that is this new black British invasion of the US.
Dame Baptiste, thank you for coming on to Friday 15. We'll look out for your star on Hollywood Boulevard in what? The next couple of years?
Yeah, next couple of years. Please look out for it.
Baba O'Reilly is by The Who. It is the opening track of the band's studio album Who's Next, which was released in 1971. Roger Daltrey sings on most of the epic song, with Pete Townshend singing the middle eight. It's only teenage wasteland. Sally, take my hand. We'll travel south. This is here, the happy walk of here. Let's get together before we get much older.
You know, there was a time when if someone told you to do something, you did it. Bam, right on. No questions asked. It was yes, sir, and yes, ma'am. You never said no, you know?
But you know, things are changing nowadays. It's a new day, babies. Folks want to take their own lives into their hands and make their own choices. No longer do they want to go along with the program because everybody says right. You know what I mean? Let me tell you what I'm talking about. You see, because I don't want no gold watch for working 50 years from 9 to 5. Oh, while the boss is guzzling champagne and I'm building beer in some dive. Because I want to be happy and free, living and loving for me. I want to be happy and free, living and
loving. If Frank Sinatra says you have the classiest singing and silkiest chops in the singing game, you know you're doing something right. Lou Rawls released more than 60 albums, sold more than 40 million records. Natural High was nominated by listener Dave Lenthal on Twitter this week.
I'm gonna taste it now before my one life streaks on by. Cause I want to be happy and free, living and loving for me. I want to be happy and free, living and loving for me, just like a natural man. Said a natural man,
just like a natural man.
Well, now I tried to do what others said that I should do. They say that I should fit in, fool 'em, make it well. Those kind of dudes just make me crazy and blue. Man, I just can't take it. So when you see me walking, won't you know?
Pretty women, are you here? Are you here right now, huh? We should all disappear right now. Look, you're getting all your friends and you're getting in the car and you're coming to the house. Are we clear right now, huh? You see the fleet, all the new things. Cop cars with the loose change. All white like a moot things. Niggas see me rolling and they mood change. Like a motherfucker. New floor, I got a dozen of them. I don't trust you, you are undercover. I could probably make some steps, sisters fuck each other. Woo! Talking fillets with the truffle butter. Fresh sheets and towels, man, she gotta love it. Yeah, they all get what they desire from it. What? Tell them niggas we ain't hiding from it.
Truffle Butter is a track by American rapper Nicki Minaj. It features Drake and Lil Wayne and contains a sample of Maya Jane Cole's song What They Say.
About a million on me right now, and I ain't talking about that Lil Wayne record. I'm still a highest selling female rapper for the record. Man, this is 65 million single soul. I ain't gotta compete with a single soul. I'm good with the ballpoint game, finger roll. Ask me how to do it, I don't tell a single soul. Pretty women, what's up? Is your hair right now? You a stand up or is you in your chair right now? Do you hear me? I can't let a whack nigga get near me. I might kiss the baddest bitch if you damn it. I ain't never need a man to take care of me. Yo, I'm in that big boy, bitches can't rent this. I floss every day, but I ain't a dentist. Your whole style and approach, I invented. And I ain't taking that back, cause I meant it.
Hope you enjoyed this week's show. Don't forget, you can follow the show's progress on Facebook by simply typing in Friday 15. You can also find us on Twitter, where you can follow me, where I'm at Royfield, spelled R-O-I-F-I-E-L-D. Now, every Thursday, you can jump onto Twitter and tweet me and nominate a song for me to put into this week's Friday 15. iTunes reviews, folks, are extremely important. They're the lifeblood of any podcast. Please go onto iTunes and write us a glowing review. And don't forget, finally, you can email me where I'm Royfield, spelled R-O-I-F-I-E-L-D, at gmail.com. See you all again in 7 days' time for more good music and great conversation.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.